Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to another important episode of The New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find everything you need at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, on the one hand, last week, I think we were ahead of the curve in putting the situation in Turkey into perspective, as now the mainstream media has also caught on to the fact that the situation is dire there. However, last week, there was also a story bubbling under. And I feel like, James, I don't know if I told you this. I probably came away from last week's New World Next Week saying, gosh, maybe we should have mentioned the NSA spying scandal. But, of course, it's still going. It's still growing. And it's still unfolding every single day. Had we mentioned this story last week, we wouldn't have even known about Snowden. He hadn't even really entered the picture. So in a situation like this, and again, where when we're taping, and then you'll see this a little bit later, there's no way we're going to be able to give you the up-to-date, but we will give you as much as we can about the NSA spying scandal. And I found, I think, an interesting way to maybe get into this and to give it a little bit of perspective. And it was something that caught my eye from a website called DemocratsAgainstAgenda21.com, and it's Snowden, Catch-22, and the Dehumanization of Our Nation. Edward Snowden, as we all now know, is the ex-CIA defense contractor working for Booz Allen Hamilton, who blew the whistle on the extent of data collection by the government, now seeking asylum outside the U.S. in an attempt to avoid life imprisonment for the release of government secrets. The absurdity of this is fully apparent. He will go to prison for releasing the secret documents showing our government is secretly obtaining and reviewing our secret documents and communications. Sort of catch-22 situation. There's a character in Joseph Heller's classic, legendary, important novel, Catch-22, named Snowden. Snowden dies near the end of the book and symbolizes man's descent into the condition of animals who live and die without reason. The basis of Catch-22 is that the war is crazy and you can only be discharged from it if you're medically discharged as being crazy. But the catch-22, is that if you try and get a discharge for being crazy, you must be sane because only a sane man would try to get out of the war. Therefore, you cannot be released from duty. So, James, I find that this is a catch-22 situation because the governments will say, we're not spying on you. Well, if you're not spying on me, why would someone like Edward Snowden be in trouble for giving out information if you're not actually spying on us? So this is the weird Orwellian catch-22, Kafka-esque. I believe I saw a headline asking the question the other day, what would Orwell and Kafka say about this situation? So, James, we do have a slew of other related notes on the NSA spying scandal, but as you have already done in a little ways in some of the videos that you've already put out, I will throw it back to you to further explain this story for folks.
Well, speaking of Orwell, it's just a side note that apparently sales of 1984 have skyrocketed on Amazon this week. So
it's
think people...
7%.
Yeah, it's coming back around, surprisingly enough. Wow, so what we've been talking about this for years, and finally it's catching on. It strikes me there's another catch-22 in this when it comes to this type of story, is the catch-22 of either the whistleblower remains anonymous, and then all of the coverage and everything about it becomes about who is this leak, how will they find the leaker, the investigation into the leak, who was the leaker, or the person comes forward like Snowden, and then it all becomes about Snowden himself and his background, his personal life, and all of that. So it's a catch-22 because, again, the media is just going to look for the easy out here, which is not to cover the actual story itself, but to look for the person behind it. So that's another aspect of this. But I think all of this gets us distracted from the real issue, which is total information awareness. Once again, this is something that we've known that they've been working towards for 12 years now, since that program was first announced there in the Bush administration, and presumably they were working on it for well in advance of that. But total information awareness, for those people who don't know, was an office that was created in the bowels of the Pentagon over a decade ago, where basically they were looking for the ability to take all of that digital information that is at the government's fingertips these days, and put them together into a complete personal profile of every single person, basically on the planet. I mean, that was the ultimate end goal of this program. Extremely ambitious, but obviously this is what they're going for, and this is what is now possible, or at least feasible, with this type of technology. So it's important to put Snowden's latest leak into perspective. Regardless, I mean, I know there are people out there who are questioning, well, and who is Snowden, and maybe this is a plant, maybe this is a setup, blah, blah, blah. But the important point is that this is just the latest in a string string of NSA whistleblowers who have all been pointing to the fact that every single electronic communication is being not just wiretapped, but literally copied at the source and stored forever in the new Utah data center that they're constructing for this purpose. Again, this came out over and over and over again. Mark Klein, 2006 AT&T whistleblower. We've got Bill Binney and Russ Tice and Thomas Drake and all the other NSA whistleblowers. So this is just the latest. And if you're just joining this NSA spying scandal story with the Snowden story, then please go back and familiarize yourself with these other points, because everything is being copied wholesale. All of this distraction about telephone data, numbers and locations and all of that, is totally beside the point. They have the actual copy of all of the electronic communications, and they can search through it. This was recently even revealed with the Boston bomber story, as I covered in my recent video on the AP spying story and the real data behind that. So again, this is something that's much, 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 much bigger than Snowden. It's about total information awareness. So please look into the history of this and realize this is just one data point in a much bigger story.
Absolutely. William Binney has been making the rounds doing interviews recently. And again, some of the related stories either come from Threat Level or my own cyberspacewar.com or even our friend Lee Camp and a moment of clarity about what we don't know about the NSA spying program. But I think it's also important to note one of these on my Twitter account at Media Monarchy. Lawmakers refute Obama's claim that full Congress knew about the NSA program. So, James, I think it's only starting, and I couldn't help but think over the last years we saw everything spilling out of the UK about their phone hacking scandal, that, of course, it was going to have some sort of parallel in a way here, and that started to spill out, of course, with the AP scandal. And now it's just completely off to the races. And I think your point about it, the story becoming about Snowden, is the way the mainstream media always will roll, and they'll always do a sort of human interest story because, yeah, as you look, oh, man, he's got a hot girlfriend. Oh, well, that's the story. We'll have to talk about that. So, James, tongue-in-cheek aside, we'll move to our second story this week, and we'll take it from a little bit of finance on Yahoo, but also, more importantly, from the fine, smart folks at ZeroHedge.com, and that is the land of the rising bail-in, Japan, to force bank losses on the investors. Japan's financial services agency will enact new rules that will force failed bank losses on investors, if needed, via mechanisms known as a bail-in. This according to the Nikkei. So there are a handful of Japanese banks that are among those proposing amendments to allow them to issue the types of preferred shares or subordinated bonds that would be used in such cases. So, James, I know when we kind of chatted about this before the show, this was something I need a little bit of explanation on. So,
all right, well, that's what I'm here for. So basically, I've been talking for weeks now on the podcast about how Japan is likely the focal point of the next stage of the economic collapse. If there is to be a sudden change in the global economic situation in the coming months, it's likely going to be happening in Japan with all the craziness that's happening in the markets here lately. And this is another very, very worrying sign, because the Japanese government bond market is, I think, the focal point for the crisis that could be developing here. And it's important to note this is the second biggest bond market in the world, right behind the American bond market. The world economy is very much looking to what happens in the JGB markets. And if banks here start implementing bail-ins, Japanese banks are for the most part zombie banks that are being propped up by government bailouts. And if they suffer big losses on the government bond market because they have large exposures, that can start the ball rolling for them starting a bail-in process like what we saw in Cyprus. Suddenly they close their doors, no one in Japan can get their money for the next few days, and when they come back, suddenly large percentages of their bank accounts have been scooped out. If that happens in Cyprus, that's one thing. If that happens in the third largest economy in the world, that's a very different thing, and that could be the type of thing that could be the start the ball rolling for a much, much bigger economic collapse scenario. So again, this is just kind of being put into the framework at this point. It's not something that's necessarily imminent, but the fact that they're flirting with this type of idea is worrying in and of itself. So certainly I'm hoping to position myself accordingly. Obviously I have a Japanese bank account, so I'm very much keeping my eye on this situation, but I think everyone around the world should have their eye on what's happening, because again, I think it could be the focal point for a bigger collapse. And speaking of that, I'm going to be writing specifically on this issue in my upcoming subscriber newsletter this weekend. I'm going to be writing about 5 economic collapse scenarios and what you can do to prepare for them, because there's not just one way that the economic collapse can happen. There's lots of different ways, and there are different ways to prepare for different collapse scenarios. So I'll be writing about this specifically, but I think everyone should be paying special attention to what's happening in Japan right now.
You know, that's interesting that you said that. I wouldn't have really thought of it until you put it in those terms. Actually, tonight on Ground Zero, our kind of main topic was, we talk about all these sort of scenarios, hypothetical speculation about these sort of apocalyptic things, but ultimately, what would happen to our economy if an attack came not from the terrorist boogeyman of the week, but what if it was just weather-related? Imagine with the severe weather that we're seeing all around the country, if that would be the thing to actually tank an economy. So I'm not sure if that would be on your list or not, but it definitely just struck me.
I might add it to the list now that you mentioned that.
Yeah. We called it the deus ex machina. There could be a you know, God in the machine that comes down and go, oh, I didn't think it was going to be that. So, James, the other couple of related notes on economics, I find it interesting. On the flip side, back here in the States, U.S. banks profit from facilitating fraud against their customers. That's letting shady merchants withdraw money from your bank account. The Deutsche Bank is opening a 200-ton gold storage facility in Singapore, and I found a piece on the Opinionator blog kind of interesting. It's called Dark Money Politics. I'm not really sure if the word dark modifies money or the politics. But having said that, James, our third and final story this week on the New World Next Week comes from Asia Times, atimes.com. World less peaceful than 5 years ago. The world, especially the greater Middle East, has become less peaceful than it was just 5 years ago, according to the 2013 edition of the annual Global Peace Index, GPI, released Tuesday, that would be June 11th, by the Institute for Economics and Peace. Consistent with that trend, the index also found that global peacefulness declined over the past year, chiefly due to the intensifying civil war in Syria, the rising number of homicides, especially in Mexico, Central America, and several sub-Saharan African countries, and increased military spending as a percentage of gross domestic product in many nations. Led by Iceland, Denmark, and Austria, the index found that Europe remained comfortably the world's most peaceful region over the past year, while South Asia was the least peaceful, dragged down by Afghanistan, which ranked 162nd of the 162 countries covered by this year's index, and Pakistan, which claimed the 157th spot. But the Middle East also fell close to the bottom. The article, of course, goes on to go kind of piece by piece and kind of nation by nation. But James, I also found it interesting as I kind of monitored my, again, Twitter feed. Thursday, June 13th, starts the 100-day countdown to the United Nations International Day of Peace. And as a little New World Next Week flashback to October of 2011, James, you and I had the opposite story. Studies show the world has never been this peaceful. So which is it?
Well, let's think about that. Well, let's take a look at some of those countries. So we've talked about Afghanistan, Pakistan, Syria, and we've talked about the GDP of an increasing share of GDP going towards military expenditures. What country on the planet has by far the largest military expenditure of all the other countries on the planet combined?
I think it's mine.
Yeah, I think it's the U.S. And the U.S. is involved in Afghanistan. It's involved in Pakistan. It's been involved in Iraq. It is currently involved in Syria, although the extent that it is involved is different officially from unofficially. But still, it is involved in Syria. So, wait, 5 years ago, the world was more peaceful. Wait, who was elected president 5 years ago?
It was just about 5 years ago, wasn't it? Was that Barry Satoru?
Yeah, that's right. The president goes by the name of Barack Obama. And wait, just a second. Hold on. What prize did he receive shortly after getting office?
he, I think, was immediately awarded the Nobel Peace Prize.
Right. Oh, so the Peace Prize president of the largest military power on the planet somehow has failed to bring more peace to the planet and, in fact, has brought more war. Wow, that's just such a shocking development that I never could have predicted it, except for all the times that we did on this program and our respective podcasts and everywhere else. So once again, I'm reaching out to the people who are just joining us here, who are waking up because of the NSA spying story or Boston bombing or whatever it is that brought you to the alternative media. I'm here to tell you that people like James and myself and others have been talking about this for years and years and years, that you have been sold a bill of goods. And if you ever believed that the Nobel Peace Prince Prize laureate himself, Obama, was going to bring peace to the world, I hope you can start questioning that assumption right now. Please join us here. We're not all crazy right-wingers. We're not all crazy left-wingers. There is something beyond the right and left, and there are people who genuinely do care about peace and genuinely do despise the warmongers, and that you're not going to find that in the Democrat or Republican parties. So I'm just saying, join us. The water's fine. Come in and start exploring, because we can unite against these people and stop just kowtowing to party lines.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think in a way that kind of brings us full circle as we went through all of those contradictions. Kind of sounds rather, I don't know, Orwellian, that war is peace and freedom is slavery and all of those things that, again, have George Orwell / Eric Blair's novel racing up the charts. Yeah, a 7,000% increase in sales of the novel, 1984. So, James, on that note, we will bring this episode 157 of The New World next week to a close. And once again, I, as always, it's my pleasure being with you every week.
Right back at you. And thank you all out there for listening. And we'll be with you again next week.